Have you ever dreamed of being able to make more money, live a better life, and have the financial freedom that's rightfully yours? Well, now is your chance. With an engaging perspective and tone, your host Ryan Dement will guide you through your journey to financial freedom one step at a time. Let's get to it. Here is your host, Ryan Dement.
Hey guys, Ryan Dement from Chasing Financial Freedom Podcast. I hope you guys are having a great day. On this episode, we have Jamal Javanji. He's an author, a life coach, but what I really like about his story, and we'll get into it, is he works with people and understands the personal struggle and challenges that we go through. And we all have those issues, whether it be money or personal, and he's going to discuss that. Jamal, welcome in.
Ryan, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you for coming in. I know it was a little bit of a wait, but thank you. Can you give the listeners a little bit of your background and who you are, and then we'll kind of jump into your story?
Totally. Well, I like to start with a little bit about my parents' story because it really shapes a lot of who I am. Was born and raised in Columbus, Ohio. Huge Buckeye fan, for any college football fans out there. my dad actually is originally, his side of the family is from India, going back two or three generations, but they migrated to, I think it was my great, great grandfather migrated to a little island called Zanzibar, which is off the east coast of Africa. It's now part of Tanzania. At the time, it was all British kind of colony. So my dad was born and raised in Zanzibar. My mom is actually from southeastern Ohio, grew up on a farm. So was kind of born into a family, very diverse backgrounds. But both on both my mom's and my dad's side, just a lot of struggle when it comes financially, a lot of poverty, generational poverty kind of thing. So I was kind of born into that backdrop. And, that is something that really informed me from an early age. I was always asking deeper questions as a child. What is the point of all of this? People may say those were spiritual questions, but the questions about why is my parents working so hard to put food on the table? What's the point of all of this? And I was always asking those questions. So, that led me, down a lot of different roads. But initially it led to more of a spiritual journey in sense of trying to figure out what the purpose of life is. I eventually became, out of high school, I was a corrections officer for about 5 years. So I worked in a prison and worked with guys, started seeing, common themes with people who were incarcerated, and they were stuck on the same questions in life that I had been stuck on. What's the point of all this? How do we get ahead? Feeling like you weren't supported, by society or by, maybe father figures and different things like that. So, I started seeing those, the deeper issues that would plague people. And, I realized it went much deeper than this person's a good person and this person is a bad person. I realized that there was trauma here that deeply affected people. And I knew I wanted to help people. I tried to skip over addressing my own internal issues and traumas and thought I could just help people. But eventually it came crashing down on me and I had to face my own quote unquote demons, if you want to put it that way, that led me into doing really exploring and doing a lot of inner work, which I realized was the solution to all my suffering was this inner work. And it was very transformative. And then that eventually led me into writing the books that I've written, and then also into my work as a life coach, helping people turn inward and discover their freedom and their power.
I've got to ask one question. Sure. What got you to become a correctional officer?
It's a great question. I look back on that, and I feel like it was serendipitous. I didn't choose it. My brother, I have an older brother, a year and a half older than me, and my dad actually had a contact with the state of Ohio. That is where we were living, had a contact with the state government. And I think this individual had worked in the corporate kind of or the offices, the government offices of in Ohio, it's called the Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections. So he suggested to my dad, he said, hey, tell your son to apply as a corrections officer. We have there's always a huge need for that. So he applied, got the job, and was working as a corrections officer. Well, when I got out of high school, about a year later, I had no, I was just trying to figure out life and who I am and what I'm going to do. And it paid well. I got married, became a new dad pretty quickly, and just needed a job that paid well. And so my brother suggested that I apply, and I got the job. And it was nothing like I had. I could have never imagined myself doing that kind of work, but it was exactly it was instrumental for me. I needed to be there to see what I saw there in those 5 years. Very difficult job, but. When I look back, so I wrote a book a couple of years, and we'll get into that, but I wrote a book, it's called Living for a Living in 2019. And, the idea of that book is that, you know, when we leverage our life for survival, it's kind of like a prison. But when we move into the essence of why we're here and what our passions are, that's when you really start to live for a living. And I literally, as I look back at that, I say, you know, I checked myself into a prison for 8 hours a day for almost 5 years for money, for a paycheck. Yes. And it was like such, I look back, of course, I didn't see the metaphor at the time. I was, you know, living it and going through it, but I look back and say, oh my goodness, what a metaphor. So, but it was instrumental. I learned a lot about people, human behavior, and even my own, you know, started to see my own issues, working in this prison day in and day out. So,
When you are called to help people probably in their worst moments of their life, you learn how to interact with people differently. And I'm speaking from experience. I'm former LAPD. So I spent my time on the streets. I did my time. I understand what you're talking about. Never worked jails. Never was my forte or my wanting. I wanted to work a beat and talk to people. But when you get to meet those individuals that you're there to help and serve, and they're in a pretty bad place or something is bad happening, you really learn more about society. But as you said earlier, you learn more about your own issues. And there was a 100%. Lot of things that came out of my, time on the force and time that I spent, helping others. It's life-changing, but also eye-opening to where you can actually work on yourself and understand, hey, as you said, I have demons. We all have demons. It's how you deal with those demons and what they do, you know, what they can and can't do to you on a daily basis.
100%. And, you know, I think the further you are removed from somebody, I mean, this is like this in anything. It's easy to demonize another person you have no contact with or, you know, interaction with. But the closer you get to a person, a group of people, whether this is on the international stage when it comes to dealing with other cultures, other countries, or whether it's just interpersonal relationships, when you see people up and close and you get to know their stories a little bit, you realize they are not that different than me. You know, they took a little different direction here and wound up in prison, but the same pain is my pain. And you start to realize we're all fundamentally the same in some of these aspects. So yeah, great point. And when you work with people at their lowest, you realize that life is vulnerable and that we could be in their position pretty quickly if we don't learn how to get a handle on what I saw was people didn't realize that their inner life was creating their outer life. They thought the outer life was creating their inner life. And that's a big shift. And obviously there's a lot more we could say about that, but it was really beautiful in working in the prison setting to help people even then, to be able to say, hey, you know, your perspective, the lens through which you see the world through, could be contributing to what you're creating in your life. And even the life that's led you to this moment where you're locked up behind bars, not have, you know, have very little freedom. What role do you play in this? And that was the beginnings of me realizing that we actually have a lot more power over life than we think we do.
And it's that first step of the unknown, as I always say, towards change, that you finally realize that the inner of you and what's going on. That's that first step, and you understand what's going on, and then you start addressing it, and then being able to understand why you do things and how we do things. I think that's all tied in. I like your inner and outer, because there's certain things that we do, and it comes from experience, but it also comes from potential trauma and what you do. And I digress into coaching and so forth, since I do financial coaching on the other side, is we all have some type of trauma with money, and people don't think that our relationship with money can be toxic, which it can be. But once you realize that you do have some type of issues with money, you can start working past it and being able to help yourself get into a better place. And as you said, start working towards your happiness and being able to go after your passions instead of just exchanging your services for a paycheck.
100%. You know, my understanding is that the most important relationship you'll ever have is the relationship you have with money, because it represents something deeper. You know, and you think about money, what is it? Well, we call it currency. And what is the root word of currency? Current is energy. So when you think about it, everything is energy, including ourself, like, you know, our, and so if we have a relationship with energy that comes from this position of scarcity, then that's going to create a lot of tension and trauma. And sometimes I like, you know, I'll, in conversations with people, I'll say, what if when you were a child, somebody came to you at the end of the day, and I know it sounds ridiculous, but if someone just came to you and said, hey, you know, how much have you breathed today? Have you been breathing a lot today? The question is like, well, I don't know why. Like, well, if you breathe too much, if you take in too much air today, we may not have enough air for the rest of the week or the month or the year. Like, you got to be careful how much you're breathing, because there's not a lot of air to go around, and you don't want to take too much, or, you know, and that would create, I mean, it's a kind of a ridiculous example, but that would create, if you were a child and someone told you that we may run out of air, I mean, what would that do to the process of breathing, of just inhalation and exhalation? It would create tension. Our breathing might become shallow. We might be afraid that we could run out of this, you know, how valuable is air? Well, it's infinitely valuable, right? No, someone could say, hey, I'll give you $1 billion I'll just take your air from you. Like, it's not a fair trade
at that point. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
But we've been that, just the thought of scarcity that gets introduced would totally destroy our natural breathing ability to inhale and exhale, to give and to receive. And I think it's a great analogy for money, because what is energy? What is money? Is energy. It's really just an exchange, giving, receiving. That's what an economy is, right? We're giving, we're receiving. It's really what the entire economic system is: people producing value, people receiving value. It's like a breathing process. And when we're taught that there's not enough for everybody, immediately that creates trauma. And so we've been taught that about money, right? There's not enough of it. There's not enough of it for you. And so that takes us completely out of what I would call alignment with the way life actually works. And there's a lot more we could say about that, but that relationship with money needs a lot of healing, because we've been indoctrinated with, in my understanding, our incorrect perception of what it even is.
So a question, that's a good conversation go down. I think we can go there. So when we talk about money and it being limited, do you think with how we spend, or how we actually consume, I should say, in the way society has made norms, is that all part of this? I call it this fear, because I talk to people and they really think they have to keep up with the Joneses. And I tell them, guess what? The Joneses are broke. They're living for paycheck to paycheck, and they're living to pay their creditors. So why do you want to keep up with them on a daily basis when you really, one, don't have to, and two, it's putting you in that negative relationship with money, because at the end of the month, you've got 50 or 60 bucks in your bank account and you can't go anywhere. How did we get here? And maybe this is more philosophical and more deeper than we can go, but I've always wanted to hear somebody else's opinion on that.
It's a great question. I heard a recent stat that was very eye-opening. It was that in the high 90% of NFL players, folks who are making multi-millions of dollars, right, in the NFL, were living paycheck to paycheck. And it struck me. And of course, even, you know, after they're out of the NFL, within 5 years, majority of football players making, you know, millions of dollars are broke. And as a matter of fact, they're broke in the NFL, paycheck to paycheck. Broke is broke, no matter what you know.
Doesn't matter, exactly.
It doesn't matter. So I really thought about that. I thought that is a fascinating, I mean, because a lot of people just naturally think that if I just had more money, everything would be great. But that's actually not the case, because poverty and abundance is a mindset. So if you come from a mindset of poverty, what are we saying here is I'm not enough. That's another way to say that, right? I don't have enough, but we tend to perceive the world through the lens in which we perceive ourselves, right? So if we're taught from an early age, you're not enough, we're not enough, we don't have enough, then there's a desire, it creates an ambition to get ahead. Now, some people may say that's a healthy thing, that's a good thing. Well, I always say this, whatever you chase, you never have, because whatever you're trying to get is always out there. It's always tomorrow. It's always the next. It's always out there. So you're pursuing something. That's a very different energy than operating from abundance. If you're pursuing abundance, it's because you don't have it now. The perception is, I don't have it now. I'm not where I should be now. But if you perceive that you are abundant, then the work and the things you do is simply a reflection of that. It's a very different energy. And one is an energy of abundance. One is an energy of poverty. So if you operate from a place of poverty, from a perception of not enough, your bank account, basically your financial life, is simply a metaphor of that internal perception. And that's why you see so many folks who come from poverty, no matter how much money they may receive, always go back to that default setting. It's kind of like a thermostat, right? The thermostat is set on broke. Money could come in, but it's always going to go back. You're going to be self-sabotage, whether it's, you name it. But a lot of times these like the sense of like trying to keep up with the Joneses is really about answering a question. Am I okay? Do I have it all together? Am I meeting some standard? So the reason we're asking the question is because it's coming from a root perception that actually, I don't have it all together. I don't have enough. I'm not successful. So then we're chasing it, trying to become that, which leads to spending money you would not spend if you felt like you had enough. So we don't really even realize what the drive is behind some of these expenditures. Why am I buying this car? Why am I going after this home? Why am I going after this, whatever it may be? We don't realize it's because we're trying to get to a state of being that the actual material item cannot deliver. So we just
can we go deeper into that? That's a great conversation. I'll add a tidbit for the NFL. NFL has the highest bankruptcy rate for professional athletes. So within 3.5 to 4 years after going leaving the NFL, retiring, they file bankruptcy.
Amazing.
Highest rate.
It's amazing.
Amazing, isn't it? You make millions of dollars and you're bankrupt a very short period of time after your career's over. And that thermostat that you just talked about, that is, you're spot on. Amen for that, because I love this in what you're talking about. So can we circle back around and kind of talk about that and then dive a little bit deeper into it?
Totally. Absolutely. Absolutely.
How do we start working with that shift? I mean, there's a point in our time, a point in our life, I should say, that we're ready for change. You know, change will come about, and we're realizing that, hey, we have some inner issues, some demons. But how do we get ourselves there? And then what does it look like from that aspect going down the road? I know it's not the same for everyone, but just some general guidelines, because there's some listeners on that are, they're going to say, hey, I'm doing Johnny's side hustle right now. I'm still working 9 to 5. My Johnny side hustle is my passion, my happiness, but I'm still exchanging my time for money because I need to be able to keep my bills paid. So they have a couple different pieces going on, and they're a little lost, and they want to make sure that they can go after their passions, but they know they can't leave their 9 to 5 right at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Totally. So what I like to say to people when when there's a question of, well, I'm limited because of finances, because of money. And a lot of times when there's a hyper focus on money itself to get us where we need to go. So we might think, well, I need more of this money in order for me to get ahead. What that does is it gives us like narrow, there's like this narrow tunnel vision, really seeing money as the only avenue in which to get ahead. But what that does is it's kind of like it filters out everything else, right? So I always say this, the universe is abundant. Just take a walk through a forest and look, it's incredibly abundant. Nature is abundant. One sunflower, I heard this, one sunflower can produce 10,000 sunflowers. That's how much, that's the seeds in one sunflower. You can produce an entire field. So this is embedded in the way nature works. So that same nature, we're a part of that. We come from it. And so when we hyper-fixate on one avenue in which income can come in or support can come in or wealth or abundance can come in, we limit ourselves. So, and I know there's a story of a guy who felt he was passionate about writing. He felt like he was going to be a best-selling author, and that's what he knew from childhood. And he just hyper-fixated. He would tell people, I'm a writer. I'm going to be a writer. I'm going to be a writer. When he got into adulthood, he kept saying that, I'm going to be a writer. That's what I'm doing. He would turn down opportunities and jobs. And just at one point he was homeless. He'd spent some time on the streets, and he kept telling people, I'm here to be a writer, and I can't make any money writing. Nobody's offering me he's written manuscripts. He was getting turned down by publishers. And somebody challenged him and said, no one's disputing that you're a writer. And no one's disputing that, you know, that this could be very lucrative for you, but why would you pigeonhole income from coming in just this one way? He said, how about this? Why don't you be open? You don't have to a lot of people think if I'm open to lots of other things, then I have to lose my passion. I have to let go of my passion. Well, I say, no, you don't have to let go of anything. Just be open. Don't say and I have friends who are musicians, and they always say, well, if I don't make money as a musician, I can't be a musician. It's like, no, let the universe support you any way it chooses to support you. Have a posture of openness, realizing like it can come in from so many different places, and it will actually support you so that you can be about your passion, so to speak. So this guy had this shift in his mindset. He said, okay, well, maybe I won't say no to life, and I'll just start saying yes to life. Opportunities come my way, I start saying yes. He started saying yes as opposed to no, because before he was just saying no because he's just a writer. He started saying yes to life because he's a writer. Money started coming in. Long story short, he ends up writing this book that eventually becomes a New York Times bestselling author, which led him, and he's multimillionaire and that kind of thing today. But the reason for that was because he shifted from being closed to being open. But you have to, the deeper mindset here is when you're pursuing, when you are hyper fixated on needing more money to do something, it's because you feel at a fundamental place that you're not supported. You feel like your reservoir is dry, so to speak. And what people want, I always say, how would you like to feel? People say, well, I'd like to feel supported. Okay. Well, how supported? Like 50%, 75%? No, it's 100%. It's like, no, you want to feel 100% supported. You want to feel 100% secure. You want to feel 100% significant. Okay. Totally. Well, I always say you have to come to this understanding real quick that nothing finite, and this is hard for people to get their minds around, nothing finite can get you to that infinite state. So if you want to feel 100% supported, don't attach that support to money, because money, by definition, is finite. How many times have we met people that say, if I just had $10,000, I'd feel great. And then you meet somebody with $10,000 and they don't feel okay. You say, if I just had $100,000, I'd feel wealthy. I'd feel secure. You meet somebody with $100,000, they don't feel secure. You can keep going up, right? $1 million, whatever. We think the money solves the deep and inherent insecurity that we feel inside, and it doesn't. And the examples you cited with the NFL are perfect. They show us that money does not eliminate poverty. What eliminates poverty is the energetic vantage point of feeling completely supported, of feeling completely significant internally. And when that is your vantage point, when that's your base of operation, then you can create an external reality that matches that internal frequency, so to speak. But if we don't start from that, we always go back to whatever our internal state is. If it's not enough, we go back to that financially, always. So I always say it has to shift internally first, which is counterproductive. Because most people think, how can I feel abundant when I have $5 in my bank account? Well, when you realize it's not the money that's going to give you the abundance, it's going to be you. You are the quote unquote, the asset, right? You're the currency. The currency, the external currency is just a mirror of the internal currency. So how do you perceive you? And it's amazing what, and the work I get to do as a coach is when you help people shift from lack, which is an external, a focus on the limitations externally, to the dimension of life that's internal. When you shift internally, we call this a spiritual process, but what do I mean by spiritual? I don't mean religious. I mean beyond the physical. When you start to realize that the basis of existence itself is abundant and infinite, and you start to really kind of marinate in that state of being, it's amazing the doors that begin to open for people physically, and the abundance that begins to come in. And people are shocked. They're going, how come I never knew about this? No, why didn't anybody ever teach me about this? And it's because we're really not taught to turn our gaze inward. I know there's a lot there, but that's the gist of, I think, your question.
So how do we get that inner change started? And I know the abundance, this is similar along the lines of The Secret and the universe and so forth. I totally agree all that. And I'm on board with it because that's what I live by. I mean, that's just, that's life. And we fight through those inner tough times and get them out. But how does one, if they're focused solely on the money, because they're thinking that that's what they need, how do they make that shift internally to where they can be in a better spot for themselves so they can start portraying that outward?
It's a great question. So what I like to say is abundance and feeling abundant and the state of abundance is not actually something you have to go get. It's actually within you. So I always tell people it's already there. So if somebody's not feeling abundant, if someone feels, you know, maybe some fear, a sense of they're not supported, that there's not enough, that feeling of not enough, of fear, of anxiety, especially when we think of the future, we're not actually dealing with the present moment. And this is really important for people to think, because what causes human suffering, right? Well, most human suffering is coming from the past, right? What we've experienced in our past, either whether we're conscious of it or not, is things that we've unprocessed traumas from our past, or when we think of the future, right? How many people... what causes anxiety is when people perceive a future, and that future we're perceiving is a future that's not enough. We're perceiving a potential lack somewhere. And so then what we do is it creates tension, and then we start to go into overdrive, trying to work so that this perceived future of lack doesn't happen. So again, there's a principle here: is what you resist persists, right? So if you are resisting a vision of an impoverished future, then we tend to end up manifesting and creating that. But I always say there's no future. When does the future actually exist? If you think about it, you will never wake up in a day that's other than today, right? It's always this moment. So the future only exists in the psychological mind. It's never actually tomorrow. It never gets here. So what are we doing when we think of the future? We're actually, and this is how the human brain works. The human brain simply is creating a vision of the future from the past. That's all it knows how to do. We can't imagine something that we haven't experienced before. The mind can't. Now, there's a part of us that actually can imagine something different, but that's not from the mind. The mind only has really one reservoir to draw from, and that is past experience. So if you grew up with trauma, with poverty, you can't really tap into a state that's something different than that. And that's why we keep repeating. So wherever our focus is, we repeat. So I always like to say, hey, if you're afraid, if you're feeling fear and anxiety, and it feels like, oh my gosh, the future's not going to be kind to me, or I feel like I don't have enough and I got to hustle so I'm not continually struggling, I always tell people that is not happening in this moment. That's actually your past. And that means that there's some work that needs to be done. This is energy. So there's no escaping. You can't actually get to abundance unless you let the past go, because the past is simply energy, and that energy gets stored at the physical level in our physical body. It's stored at the mental level in our mental body. So there's a process. There is a way for people to say, okay, I have felt impoverished. Yeah, we've dealt with the trauma of not having enough. Lots of people went through tremendous things, and that doesn't go away with time. That just gets buried, that energy, and it keeps recycling. So there's a way to simply, number one, understanding that that's not this moment, right? Because the brain doesn't know that. The brain feels it as if it's happening again. It's just, this is happening right now. Now we have to protect ourselves. We get into fight or flight mode, and we start to become resistive. But when we can understand this is actually not happening now, right now, if we just analyze the nature of this moment, in this moment, I like to have people do this. Like, let's just sit back and think about this moment. What is actually happening right now in this moment? Well, think about, well, first of all, we're breathing. So what are we breathing? Air.
Air.
It's abundant. How much air is available to us right now? All of it.
In this unlimited.
Moment, unlimited. It's
yes.
Infinite.
Unlimited.
Yeah.
Do our hearts beating? Where's the energy coming from to supply? I mean, these are like literal electrical impulses that are keeping our heart beating. Where's that coming from? Somewhere. It's coming from some source. We're not plugged in anything externally. So it's coming from someplace internally, and it's there right now. We're fine. Do we have food in this moment? Yeah. How much food do we have? Enough for this moment. How about a roof over our head? Oh yeah, totally have it. So immediately we start to dwell on these things. We realize, oh, this is abundant. This moment's abundant. Now we're tapping into energy that is abundant. That is the opposite of a poverty mindset. Now we, in this moment, have everything we need to begin to create the next moment. Because how we interact with this moment will determine what we're creating in the next moment. But if our energetic focus is on the past, which is what fear is, fear doesn't exist in this moment. And that's hard for people to understand. It's like fear can only exist in the past. Where is the past? It doesn't exist. It's over. It's gone. We have records of it in the mind, but it doesn't really exist. So when our focus is in the past, then that's what we end up creating and repeating. But we really have nothing to be afraid of in this moment, and that's a game changer. Then we can create. I always say, what do you have to work with? Well, everything, because in this moment, that's where everything is. It's this moment, and so it really does start with shifting that focus. And then there's techniques we introduce people with processes that will help clear old energy out of the system. So
that's really cool. It's very deep. I like this because it, people think, and I'm back to money. People think that people earn money because they're, you know, different than anybody else, but it's mindset, it's shift. It's your internal, you know, being and working to that place. But I think the biggest thing is they have a mindset that I have everything I need. I can grow that even more. But there's also that persistence and consistency to where you're thankful for the things that you have every single day. And that just brings more every single day. And it's just, I call it it's like a daily mantra. It's a daily thought process. You wake up in the morning and I'm alive. I'm breathing air. I'm actually healthy. I have a roof over my head. I got clothes on my back. You know, I'm able to pay my bills. I look at all those things and say, okay, the day is going to start out great. The day is great and let's go get it. And that just kind of starts me rolling. And then if I do hit a speed bump, okay, back up. What happened? Kind of digest it and then move back forward and say, hey, it's part of life, but I don't live after the bump happens, because if I do, it just takes my whole day and it's el garbage, as I say. And it's, I don't know why so many people want to live in the past. It's for me, it's depressing, but two, it's sad to see it.
Totally. And I think a lot of folks don't realize that they have an option. Like there is actually an option. And when you realize like, oh, it's a series of decisions that we make, you know, it's, I sometimes like to tell the story, the word decide, the root word of decide is actually side, C-I-D-E. And side is the same root word for suicide, homicide. It really means to kill, to put to death. So when you decide, you're literally putting something to death. So I say you could decide today where your energetic focus will be. If it's on the past, right, then you're gonna repeat the same. All that can happen is just a repetition, a regurgitation of those same traumas. But if you decide to be fully awake and present to this moment, to this day, then you get your money's worth today. If then you're putting to death the past. In that moment, if you decide to be fully awake and present to what I would say my most free and abundant self in this moment, then the past is dead. And it's a decision. And it's a decision we continually make. And it's a choice we have. And then we become conditioned based upon either the past or the present. If we're conditioned upon the present, abundance is inevitable. And which I know some people may sound crazy. No, because this moment's abundant. It naturally is. But if we are conditioned by the past, our experience is limited because I've only experienced a certain amount of things. I always say the things you haven't experienced is always a lot. First of all, how many things have I not experienced? Well, an infinite amount of things, right? So what I haven't experienced is infinite compared to what I have experienced. So if I want infinite possibilities, then my focus needs to be on what I have not experienced, which is everything in this moment. It's all new. It's brand new. So, it's a huge shift in perspective, and it requires making a daily decision to shift our focus, especially in the beginning when we're conditioned to just be focused on the past. And I guess most folks don't realize that. They think this today is the same as yesterday. It's impossible. Historic. No, definitely yeah. Not. It's all new.
So all great information, and I'm thankful to have you on. How can the listeners get a hold of you, contact you, buy your book?
Yeah, great question. Well, on my website, which is my first and last name, JamalJivanji.com, is kind of the hub. My book is available there. My coaching practice is available there. And also my podcast. I have a podcast I do called The Lovecast and with Jamal, and that's also hosted there. That's probably the best place. I'm also on all the social media outlets, Jamal Jivanji. I'm first and last name. You can find me there, but probably the website's the best way.
And we'll link your website in the show notes, and we'll put all that information in our show so you can have that, get a hold of you. Thank you for one, coming on, two, having a deep conversation, and three, we definitely have to come and have you back on again, just for the simple fact we could have some more conversations and get more entrenched into the entrepreneur spirit and the mindset and kind of just start digging into that, because there's some struggles there. And I'll talk from my personal experience and put myself on the line. I have no problem doing that. It's a battle. It's a daily 100%. Battle, and you have to grind it out. It's not just up here. It's what's mm-hmm. inside. Totally. And it's hard at times.
100%. Well, I would be honored to have that conversation. I really appreciate the work you're doing and the show here. And when I listen to your podcast, I just realized you're giving a gift to the world. The conversations you're hosting and what you're presenting to the world is a gift. And I hope your listeners really just cherish and relish the work you're doing.
Thank you. It's a passion. I love it. And I hope I can touch one person with our conversation today, and that's a win for me.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Well, thank you for coming on, and definitely we'll be having you back on in the near future.
Sounds good, Ryan. Thank you.
Thank you.